All right, joining me now, he is the man when it comes to talking about all things energy and the wacko lefties who want to take it all away from us. He's Daniel Turner, the founder and executive director of Power of the Future, powerofthefuture.com. What's up, my man?
Well, Rich, it's great to be on your program. Thanks for having me back.
You bet. We got a lot to chat about. It's been a little while, but I want to start about, you wrote this great piece over at The Federalist. J.D. Vance's message resonates with poor communities hollowed out by climate change elites. And you go into a lot of detail here about just how bad a lot of these communities are doing. And, you know, we've heard a lot of talk about outsourcing of jobs and companies going overseas, but you really get into the fact that there's another aspect to this that's devastated these communities, and it's been the war on energy.
Yeah, it has been. And you know, I started my organization a few years ago really because of coal miners close to where I live in West Virginia. And what happened to them during the Obama administration? And you got to go back, and, you know, we're going back a couple of years, but Obama said very clearly when he was running for president back in 2007, he said, look, I'm not going to make coal illegal, but I'll tell you this, if you own a coal company, you're going to go bankrupt when I'm president. And people applauded, and they said, yay, this is great, because we hate coal because we're dumb, right? This idea that coal is pollution, coal is dirty, that's just all a bunch of lies. And coal actually is vital to our economy, not just to produce electricity, but for so many other millions of materials that we need that are made from the power of coal. But what happened was Obama won to a certain extent, and we've closed half of our coal mines nationwide. Are we cleaner, right? Are we greener? Are we? No, nothing has really changed, except if you lived in that little town in West Virginia, or, you know, Pennsylvania has tons of these towns. If you live there and now the only source of revenue for you and your neighbors and your dad and your grandparents, if that's gone, now you live in poverty. And we've seen this, obviously, with coal. J.D. Vance grew up in one of these towns, but we've seen it with steel towns. We've seen it with other mining. We've seen it with other manufacturing. Heck, go back. Let's date ourselves, Rich. Go back to Michael Moore when he started his career with that movie, Roger and Me.
Michael Moore, Roger and Me. That's right.
It was all about Flint, Michigan, and how the jobs were moving to Mexico, and him saying, what about the people who live in my hometown of Flint? What do they do now? He rose to fame on the very ethos of J.D. Vance's book and history. And you know, if we have one of our own champions saying we have to stop decimating small towns, that's a good thing for the country.
Yeah, so you go through this. At the beginning of the 20th century, Ohio had 1,155 coal mines with more than 50,000 coal miners. By 2003, there were 7 mines and only 2,000 mining jobs. So, yeah. I mean, that's, you know, an absolute devastation there. And the people behind this, all kinds of billionaires like Michael Bloomberg spending tons of cash, John Kerry, with the goal of closing every coal plant in America. So I guess the first thing people are listening, Daniel Turner, and they're thinking, well, is that a good thing? Because aren't these coal plants very dirty and aren't they very bad?
Yeah, that's all a bunch of lies. They're not. And the fact of the matter is we don't use any less coal now. We just pay 3 times the price. Coal has just become very expensive. And all of the goods that are made from coal have become expensive because we need coal. And again, there are certain products we do not know how to make, like steel and cement, that we do not know how to make without coal. So we are not using any less coal. We're just paying an awful lot more because we've decreased the actual supply. But there are some very pernicious figures. Tom Steyer, I highlighted in this article. Tom Steyer, remember, he ran in 2019 for president when Kamala first ran. Remember when everyone ran for president back in 2019 before COVID, when, you know, Pete Buttigieg threw his hat in the ring. Tom Steyer ran for president on this green platform saying, you know, we're going to ban fossil fuels nationwide. He's a billionaire. His hedge fund, Farallon Capital, is one of the largest investors in coal in China and in Indonesia. So here's this guy who's running saying, I'm going to shut down coal in America. Oh, but my company, you know, we hire 9-year-old girls in Indonesia to mine coal where there's no OSHA and there are no labor unions and there's no time off and there's no maternity leave and there's no health care plan. So, you know, you have someone, and now I'm going to start getting angry. What a disgusting human being Tom Steyer. Tom Steyer should be almost arrested for crimes against humanity. And he's running for president saying, we will not have Pennsylvania coal miners. Yeah, but the seven-year-old girl in Middle China? Yeah, that's cool, because I make a boatload of money off of child and slave labor coal. That's the people pushing the anti-coal message.
And as far of that, and, you know, and J.D. Vance, and I like how you reference this in your piece over at The Federalist, that Hillbilly Elegy, J.D. Vance's book, was an inspiration to you and part of the reason why you actually started your nonprofit, Power of the Future.
Yeah, it really was, because, I wanted to get involved in this space. I felt like energy workers were being greatly disrespected by government. There was a total disconnect of people who made energy policy and the people who were forced to live energy policy. But that's all very intellectual and wonky and, quite frankly, boring. Really what got me off my butt and said, all right, you have to do this. You've got to start this. What got me moving were these small towns, were these people who, you know, they worked in coal, their grandparents worked in coal, they've been there for generations, and now they're screwed. And now they have no options because their only asset is their house, right? You graduated high school, you married your sweetheart, you had three kids, you both work at the coal mine, and now the coal mine's gone. What do? Right? Your only asset is your house. You can't sell it because no one's moving into that town. There are no other jobs. And what happens when you find towns like this? And we know this all across America. What happens is poverty. And when you have systemic poverty and institutional poverty, you have rises in suicides. You have rises in opioids and alcohol abuse. You have rises in domestic violence incidents. That's what happens when you plunge towns into poverty. And then you know, we make fun of them. I'm like, you're a bunch of hillbillies. You're a bunch of rednecks. You're a bunch of – that's what I consider all Trump voters, quite frankly.
Oh, sure.
Right? And we laugh at them. And we're like, West Virginia, you're a bunch of redneck, white trash, et cetera. But you know, no one moved to West Virginia because it was poor. They moved there because there were jobs. Go to a great little town like Johnstown, Pennsylvania, right? It's a beautiful town, beautiful little town, square, church at one end, courthouse at the other. That was a thriving community and had been for decades. But now Johnstown's a little depressed. Why? Because they closed all the local coal mines. And now, so we've allowed these towns to fall into poverty. Poor towns aren't created. They're allowed by bad government policy, pushed by people like Steyer and Bloomberg and Kerry.
Now, when we think about this and the impact on these communities, and, you know, I go back to when I remember Hillary Clinton was running for president and she went down to West Virginia. She met with some coal miners. She said, you know, I know, Bo, I know how challenging it is. And they talked about giving them the ability to lay broadband cable. You know, they were going to go in there and retrain them. And it was all BS. And, you know, for a lot of people, like, I don't want to do that. I want to be a coal miner. It's actually a job I want to do. And, of course, it's been depicted by the media as a terrible occupation, no question about it. But there's another aspect to this too, of course, which is that as they go after all these energy resources, they tell us, well, the answer is, you know, wind turbines and solar, and people don't realize, and you've done a great job, Daniel Turner, of Power of the Future, pointing this out, how much of that comes from China. You know, the wind turbines are made in China. The solar panels are made in China. When these things expire, we don't know what the hell we're going to do with them. Just like we don't know what we're going to do with car batteries. We also, to your point about the slave mining that occurs for the minerals for those batteries, again, these are things we just don't talk about. We don't talk about dead whales and dead dolphins on the Jersey Shore and off the coast of Nantucket. It's not fashionable to talk about these things.
No, and it's not fashionable to talk about the fact that all these products are made with and by the power of coal. I mean, you see report after report that says how China's building the equivalent of a new coal plant every week. And they are. And the reason why is because they are building the very stupid wind and solar factories that we're buying so that we don't burn coal. So I guess the question for the green movement is, why is it good for China to burn coal to make solar panels so that we can make electricity, whereas we could just burn the coal directly and make electricity, right? Why is it good for China to burn coal to make steel and cement when we need steel and cement? I mean, you've got this one idiot cabinet secretary who's trying to
just
pass
one?
Well, there's several, but the one in particular I'm thinking about is Deb Haaland, who's the Secretary of Interior, who passes edict after edict after regulation of banning coal, of making it impossible to extract coal. And then you have another idiot cabinet secretary, Pete Buttigieg, who keeps talking about how we're going to build all these choo-choo trains and we're going to build roads and bridges and all of the products he needs to do that building as the transportation secretary is all made from coal. And you want to ask the Buttigieg and Deb Haaland, do they ever sit down and talk and say, hey, buddy, you're passing a bunch of rules that makes coal expensive. I'm trying to build bridges and roads, and I need steel and cement, and all that needs coal. Like, do these people ever get on the same page and say, we're actually negating our efforts by our own dumb policies? And they don't. Of course they don't. They don't, because they don't know what you use coal for. They don't know. Pete Buttigieg has no idea how steel is made. You know, he'll tell you he can speak eight languages, but he doesn't know how things are manufactured, and that's the problem. And that's also the spirit of Power the Future, people who make decisions that have no idea the consequences of their decisions.
So then let's turn to Kamala Harris, shall we? Because obviously, you know, there's a high chance she's going to be the Democrat nominee for president. I still have my doubts, but as of right now, she's on track for that. She'd be a disaster. I mean, she talked about – my favorite is when she talked about banning cheeseburgers, you know, for the good of the planet. And ironically enough, it was James Carville who told Maureen Dowd he's tired of these liberal women telling us how to live our lives. It's a feminist message, and it's turning off voters, particularly black voters. That's literally who Kamala Harris is. She doesn't want you to have a gas stove, wants to ban campfires, and, of course, ban cheeseburgers for the good of the planet. Eat your peas, Daniel Turner. Eat your peas.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'm so glad you mentioned the cheeseburger thing, because it shows you how we have so much happening in the media on a daily basis, and we're bombarded by it. The fact that the president was almost assassinated 2 weeks ago is no longer in the news, right? And so to go back to Kamala of 2019, which is 5 years ago, and say, here is a woman running for president who did quite literally say, we have to have that conversation about banning certain foods and banning behaviors for the good of the planet. I mean, our founders are rolling in their graves to think, you think you have, as the president, have the right to tell people what food they're allowed to eat? But she thinks that is totally within her purview. That is the role of government, is to decide what your food's allowed to be for the good of the climate. I mean, these are scary, scary principles that, if brought to their logical conclusions, means if you're going to ban behavior, you got to enforce it. So, I mean, the war on drugs has worked very well. How's the war on cheeseburgers going to do? Are people going to knock on your door? Right? Do you have to fill out a form? Do you have to? How are they going to enforce that? Are we going to have police at the Safeway? They don't have police at the Safeway or the grocery store now to prevent it from being looted, but are they going to have police at the grocery store now to prevent you from buying red meat on Tuesdays?
Yes.
So
you're allowed
this
to
is
steal.
The stupidity.
You just can't steal red meat. All right. That's where they say you've crossed the line now.
Exactly. And you know, her campaign put out a statement, which I think for Pennsylvania, and it's, you know, what we were texting about earlier, I think for Pennsylvania is clutch, because hundreds of thousands of people work in the industry, oil and gas industry in Pennsylvania, and a lot of that revolves around fracking. You know, we have over 1 million fracked wells in America right now. Half of our oil and 2/3 of our natural gas come from fracked wells. So fracking is not like this weird, you know, isolated, barely used. Fracking is as prevalent to the industry as is breathing. And Kamala Harris has always said she supports a fracking ban. And yet late Friday evening, the day before she went to Pennsylvania for a rally, she has an anonymous staffer suddenly come out and say, oh yeah, I don't support a fracking ban. And every media outlet has picked up on it. Every media outlet has gone all day, all weekend, saying, no, this is just Trump propaganda saying she supports a fracking ban. She's on the record saying she supports a fracking ban. So Pennsylvania, you gotta push her hard on this and get it from her own words, her own mouth, and don't let some idiot anonymous campaign staffer make a radical announcement about energy policy.
Yeah, I mean, the lies here that these people tell. We have the receipts. And I think Dave McCormick, who's running for U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania, has done a great job of pushing all that out there, all the audio of the things that she said, a big compilation of it. And I think people are going to remember this. It doesn't change. I mean, the fact is that whether it's Kamala Harris or it's Joe Biden or it's any other Democrat, I think people, particularly people that work in the energy sector, know what they want to do. They may lie when they're running, but at the end of the day, when they get in there, they want to placate the wacko green left, and they always do. That's their constituency. I mean, it's the same at the border, right? They may talk tough on the border, but they want to placate the lunatics who want open borders. They always do. I have to believe voters see through that, Daniel. I really do. But again, we don't know. Now, to get back to J.D. Vance, and you conclude your piece of The Federalist by saying, J.D. Vance on the presidential ticket is elevated a small-town boy who will end the carnage of America's small towns and make their forgotten communities great again. CNN and MSNBC have devoted an enormous amount of time to saying that J.D. Vance is a terrible pick. He's weird. He's odd. Trump's regretting it. I don't believe any of that. And it sounds like from your piece, you think he's an incredible asset to the ticket.
I think he is. And I think he should spend his time going through these small towns, which have very often felt ignored. Voting turnout is not high in these towns. They may be Trump voters and they may have American flags out, but you'll find that large percentages of them do not vote because they feel like there's no purpose, right? They've been voting since their whole life and since the Clinton administration, when NAFTA kicked in, since the Clinton administration, when we gave China most favored nation status, we've seen just job after job disappear and move to China, move to Mexico, whether it's furniture making in North Carolina, whether it's steel in Pennsylvania or brake pads. You know, the very story of the classic movie Tommy Boy, one of the greatest movies ever made.
Ever.
The very story of Tommy Boy is trying to save a brake pad factory, from closing up and moving out of the country and trying to save those jobs. That's what J.D. Vance is. And I feel like if he spends his time in those communities and drives out the vote, you know, upstate New York, it's not hard to cancel New York City. Rural Pennsylvania, it's not hard to cancel Philadelphia and its suburbs. But it's a numbers game, and rural Pennsylvania has to get out, and they have to get out big with numbers and say, why are we voting for this woman who despises us? Why are we voting for Bob Casey, who probably hasn't been to any of our small towns ever, if he's even awake right now? Why are we voting for Bob Casey for a 19th year in the United States Senate when how many jobs have moved overseas? Even Fetterman and Josh Shapiro last election cycle flip-flopped on fracking because they knew they wanted to win. I don't know if their policies have changed, their rhetoric has, and maybe that's a start, but your current governor and your current senator both said, oh boy, I better change my opinion on fracking if I want to win this race. So it's not surprising Kamala's doing it, but I don't believe it. I think Bob Casey needs to go on the record. I think Kamala needs to go on the record. And I think Pennsylvania needs small town Pennsylvania needs to turn out in big numbers so that they can have their voices heard at the ballot box.
Well said, my friend. Well said. Follow Daniel on Twitter at DanielPTF, Daniel Turner PTF, and PowerTheFuture.com. Always a pleasure, my friend. Keep up the fight. We appreciate everything you're doing.
Thanks, Rich. It's going to be a good year, but I look forward to being back with you.
Can't wait, brother. Can't wait. And that's the big story of the day brought to you by our buddy, Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile with two locations to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury. Just reach out to him today for your perfect smile, VeneriaDental.com, VanariaDental.com, VeneriaDental.com. All right, as we continue the show here in our fourth and final hour, well, Pennsylvania is the key to the presidency. So how do we make sure the vote is secure? We'll talk to our buddy, Linda Kearns, about protecting the vote and the part you need to play, to make that happen. I'll also give you some of the latest data coming out of swing states like Pennsylvania, for example. And we'll do all that as we continue along on a Monday. Don't go away.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, so in order to win Pennsylvania, we have to protect the vote. Okay, we have to protect the vote so that we can win Pennsylvania, and that is a must do. So here to talk about it, a return to the show, our friend Linda Kearns, protectthevote.com. She's spearheading the effort in Pennsylvania, and we're so grateful for her efforts. Linda, how are you today?
I'm great, Rich. How are you?
Well, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling optimistic based on everything polling wise, how it's looking in Pennsylvania. I know there's a lot of concern from people. I was at a New Jersey Republican event yesterday with the New Jersey Federation of Republican Women. I met a woman from Philadelphia there, and she said, "What can I do? How can I help?" And I said, "You should go to protectthevote.com and sign up, be a poll watcher, and help out." Now, I know you're doing your trainings. And you've started that, and you're also hearing a lot of concerns from people. Is that right?
Absolutely. We had a training yesterday because yesterday was 100 days out, and we have several trainings per week on Zoom that you will get an invitation to attend if you sign up for protectthevote.com. And the trainings are really comprehensive and tell our people who want to be poll watchers or poll workers or observers at the counting, it tells our people exactly what we want them to do. So they have all the information necessary to be the Republicans National Committee's representative at those places.
Okay. Now, there was an article recently in The Washington Post. Pennsylvania presidential election results could again take days to count. They say that there's a lot of concerns about mail-in votes, a lot of concerns that this is going to be, again, you know, another S show, and we might be up for days here. Are you hearing that from the people at your trainings?
Yes, some of the voters are concerned about that, and I understand that. But remember, in 2020, it was the first time that we had mail-in voting. So it was the first time that these boards of elections had to do it. So they've now had several elections under their belt. So I think that they have better procedures in place. In addition, in Pennsylvania, the legislature did pass a law that states that if you, as a county, accept state money, then you have to count 24/7, which means you start on election day at 7 and you continue until you are finished. In 2020, they did not do that. They stopped several times. They stopped overnight. They stopped when I won a lawsuit that said that they had to let us closer to the counting. They stopped that for several hours so that they had time to appeal that. So they are not permitted to do that this time. So it should go a lot faster.
Okay, that's good. That's very, very good. What are some of the other, when you do the trainings, and kind of give us an overview of how the trainings work. So somebody goes to protectthevote.com, they sign up, they say, I want to help out, want to be a poll watcher, want to give up my time so I can make sure this election's fair. And then what happens next?
So we have excellent staffers who will contact you, and then you'll be signed up for a Zoom training. We offer them several times per week, and it took a while. I think we were on for well over an hour, but we go through and we explain exactly what happens in a polling place. And it was great because I watched it yesterday, and I could listen to a lot of the voters and their concerns. One of the things that they kept asking was, well, should we really vote by mail? Because obviously the message previously was don't vote by mail. It's not safe. And I know that we as conservatives and patriots, we have inherent suspicions about mail voting, but we have to play the game. And simply refusing to vote by mail is giving the other side the advantage. It's like giving the Cowboys a 2-touchdown lead every time the Eagles play. And we can't do that. If there's any chance whatsoever, you will not make it on election day, vote by mail. And this way we can get what we call the low propensity voters. You have friends, neighbors, brothers, sisters who may not prioritize getting to the polls. So let's encourage them to get out prior to election day and vote by mail so that we can win this election. And if we really want to change voting procedures, we have to win first.
Well, yes, winning first is a very smart move. That's no question about that. Tell me about, and I don't know all the rules of coordination, so you have to educate me, but how involved are the McCormick campaigns, the Trump campaign, the Republican National Committee? How involved in everybody is this with Protect the Vote and making sure we have election integrity going into November?
Well, Rich, as you may know, this is my third cycle working for the Republican National Committee, and this is a new Republican National Committee, and we're working with the Trump campaign and the McCormick campaign, and the commitment to election integrity is something I've never seen. Chairman Whatley, co-chairman Laura Trump, they are working and setting up this election so that we have all of the resources we need, and we have a vast operation in place. We have learned others like me who are working day in and day out when I'm not on the radio to make sure that all the rules are being followed. And we have staffers who spend all day recruiting and training people and making sure that we have the systems in place so that on election day, things go smoothly.
All right. On election day, things go smoothly. What about leading up to election day? Are we still having drop boxes? That's a question I keep getting asked.
Yeah, I know. And I've heard people ask that. There are still drop boxes in Pennsylvania. Unfortunately, there is an opening in the law that is allowing some counties to allow drop boxes. And Philadelphia is one of them.
How do we ensure the integrity of the drop boxes? I mean, we all know the famous video of that woman who was a clerk stuffing her own drop box. And the only reason why we know it is because a whistleblower blew the whistle, because it was her camera on her drop box that she was stuffing. So, you know, I've heard people suggest, I was talking to a cop one day and he said, why don't we just have these things streamed online so everybody can volunteer to watch them? What steps can we take to ensure that drop boxes are not stuffed?
Well, if you live in a county in Pennsylvania and want to get involved in that, I encourage you to call your local Republican committee, because they're the ones handling that part of the process. In addition, if I have poll watchers in every polling place, then they can watch and make sure that if someone voted by mail, by Dropbox, and then try to come in to vote again, that the procedures are followed and they're not permitted to do that. So so my plan to have these poll watchers in every polling place will help the integrity of the vote, because we can make sure that those voters aren't voting multiple times.
Okay, that's good. That's very, very good. Now, the other question, Linda Kearns, is since now we have the potential for Kamala Harris to be the Democrat nominee, although, you know, she's not officially the nominee yet, what are you hearing from people in terms of how morale is? I mean, now that Biden is not running and we've got a new candidate potentially, and, you know, I think McCormick's doing a great job of putting out a lot of her past statements on things like banning fracking, although now that her campaign's walking that back. I mean, what are people saying?
Okay. Well, Rich, first of all, I would love someone to ask Kamala Harris what fracking is, because I bet she doesn't know. I bet she couldn't define it. I bet she couldn't even define what an assault weapon is. She says these things. They're just hollow statements. And she has been a co-pilot of the entire Biden disaster presidency. She is a California liberal, and we don't want the United States to turn into California. And Rich, if I want to know about morale, I can just listen to your show, because you've predicted things and they've come true. I don't know if you have a crystal ball or what's going on. You're the smartest guy in radio, and you're predicting that Donald Trump is going to be the next president of the United States. I agree with you. He's in the strongest position to win. But when you say things like that, I don't want people to get complacent. It means that we have to work 10 times harder to make sure he is the next president of the United States, to make sure that I have poll watchers, poll workers, and lawyers to volunteer. And everyone listening, I want you to go to protectthevote.com and sign up. It's one day. It's November 5th. It's going to be a tough day, but you're going to help us put President Trump over the top and get him back in office.
Well, you're very kind to say that I'm the smartest guy on radio. I have gut instincts for things, which are good. And my gut instincts are telling me that Kamala Harris is a disastrous candidate. Even if she were to pick Josh Shapiro as her running mate, I don't think it helps her. I don't think it helps in the least. But, you know, we'll see if that goes. I mean, Shapiro's another one who's flip-flopped all over the place on things like school choice and Lifeline scholarships, for example. Right, Linda?
Yeah, I don't even understand why the people are anointing him like he's just some great thing. I don't think Pennsylvania is any better since he's been in office. And in fact, I think it's worse. And I think him flip-flopping on those school vouchers, that hurts a lot of Pennsylvanians. That hurts Pennsylvania families. It hurts Pennsylvania children. So I don't think, no matter who's the vice president candidate with Harris, I think that Trump is going to be the next president. So I'm not worried.
All right. But are you excited for Elvis Week? Because it's coming up August 9th through the 17th, 2024. Are you going to Graceland, Linda Kearns? That's what people want to know.
I know. Well, August 16th, that's the anniversary of when Elvis died. He died in 1977.
He's not dead. Stop it.
I've already been to Graceland once this year. I've done my pilgrimage for 2024. And I swear, when you ask me about this, I hope this doesn't hurt the confidence of voters that some Elvis nut is also the lawyer for the Republican National Committee. I hope people realize that I did my Elvis pilgrimage. It's behind me. And now I am 24/7 in on this election. And I'll do my Elvis pilgrimage again in 2025 when Trump is our president.
So basically, Linda Kearns, this election matters so much to you right now that you're putting off the king and your pilgrimage to Graceland for this election. That's huge. I need to understand that.
I am absolutely putting it off. I do listen to Elvis music as I'm sitting here working on my legal stuff, but that's it. Other than that, I am 100% all in on this election.
All right. So what's your call to action here, Linda Kearns? What do you need people to do?
Please go to protectthevote.com. Sign up. Give us your information. We'll see if we have a spot for you to be a poll worker, which is actually to work in the polling place. If not, we'll place you as a poll watcher or to watch the voting or something else to help us. Because this is an election where we need all of the help we can get. We need volunteers mobilized across the Commonwealth. And if you tell your friends and family that you're volunteering, there's a better chance then that they'll want to make sure that they vote. So it is so important to go to protectthevote.com.
All right, my friend, we'll do it. Protectthevote.com. Linda Kearns, always a pleasure. Let's talk again very soon.
Thank you so much, Rich.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
White women for Kamala. Where are all the white women at? Well, they're all complaining about their place in the world with Kamala Harris at the top of the ticket. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here today. Karen's for Kamala inside the White House women Zoom call for Harris. Elizabeth Nolan Brown writing this. White women, we have 100 days to save the world. Answer the call. And they did this on Thursday, July 25th, a virtual meeting. I missed it because I was in New York doing my double secret super probation meeting. And then I had on Friday my sinus surgery, which you could probably hear I'm still very congested. And I'm going to be like this for a couple days longer until the doctor vacuums out my nose. But boy, was Friday brutal. Oh, man. I did they did the surgery. It was like an hour and a half. I was under the knife. And then I woke up with an ocular migraine. And they just don't give you the good drugs anymore. They really don't. You know, they're all so nervous about it. They're like, take Tylenol. Take Advil. Give me a break. I need the good stuff. Luckily, I got a guy. So, you know, that guy was very, very helpful. But what I missed was Karen's for Kamala. Connie Britton was one of the actors, one of two celebrities, several politicians, and reportedly more than 100,000 others on a Zoom call, advertised as a way for white women to show up for Kamala Harris. What transpired echoed advocacy around Hillary Clinton 8 years ago. It was oddly reminiscent in tone, she says, if not substance, of missteps we've seen from other people who are conservatives. You had Senator Kristen Gillibrand there. You had Pink. Pink was there. And it was organized by gun control activist and Moms Demand Action founder Shannon Watts, who modeled the meeting after recent calls set up by and for black women and black men who want Harris for president. Can we all just refresh our memory for the fact that nobody wanted Kamala Harris in the first place? That's why she didn't get the nomination in 2020. It's why she barely won her seat for attorney general in California. Lost by like 1% or something like this. But you have a lot of these people who are on this call, the white women for Kamala. You had activists, you had celebrities, and you had an influencer who says white women should never correct black women. Never. All right. Just so you know that. That's one of those things that should never happen. So if that happens, well, now you know you've done something bad. So let's take a listen, shall we, to one of the Kamalas, one of the Karens, on the Kamala call. This is a white woman telling us never to correct a black woman.
Ariel Hodar, affectionately known as Mrs. Frazzle to her combined audience of over 1.5 million followers, is here to help gentle parent us through this election.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. I am so honored to speak today. I am shaking to just be among such incredible company. We are here because, as if you were here earlier, you've heard BIPOC women have tapped us in as white women to step up, listen, and get involved this election season. This is a really important
BIPOC is people of color, I believe, is one of their fancy little lefty acronyms. You know, I believe James Carville was on this call. I don't know. Was he losing his mind? Because this is the guy that lectured us that all these feminist, preachy, Karen, liberal women are going to be the death of the Democrat Party. So I'm curious how Carville's feeling as he's listening to this, and BIPOC and all the little, I'm sure Latinx was thrown around, all the names of the faculty lounge that Carville talked about that are killing Democrats, particularly with black men. But hey, let's keep it going.
Time. And we all need to use our voices and influence for the greater good. No matter who you are all influencers in some way. So tonight, I'm going to share some do's and don'ts for getting involved in politics online and navigating the toxicity that comes with it.
Okay.
And spoiler alert, as much as the toxicity can come from the outside, it can come from us too. So first, don't isolate yourself. We can do our best work when we're in community together like we are tonight, because the toxic feels smaller when we support each other.
Aww.
But don't make it about yourself.
Oh.
As white women, we need to use our privilege to make positive changes. If
privilege.
You find yourself talking over or speaking for BIPOC individuals, or God forbid, correcting them, just take a beat. And instead, we can put our listening ears on. So
God forbid.
Do learn from and amplify the voices of those who have been historically marginalized, and use the privilege you have in order to push for systemic change. As white people, we have a lot to learn and unlearn. So do check your blind spots. You
check
are responsible for your algorithm, believe it or not.
Okay, very good. This is going to work out well. I'm telling you, this is going to work out well. We're unleashing an army of Karens. An army of Karens who are going to go out there and fight. I'm curious what Tulsi Gabbard thinks about that as a woman of color. Because she's Native Hawaiian. I think that would count as the BIPOC. I don't know. I don't freaking know. I don't care. I really don't. This is what she told Trey Gowdy. And I think she's spot on about this in terms of why Kamala Harris is actually more dangerous than Joe Biden.
This is frankly what makes her an even more dangerous potential president than President Biden has been. And I think it's important for us to focus on this as they've made this change midstream. And the reason why she's more dangerous is because she is an ideologue. And her ideology is rooted in extreme policies that are far worse for our country than Joe Biden's have ever been. And I'll point to two major examples. The border is one of them. She really believes that the real problem with our open borders and this massive illegal immigration is crime and poverty in other countries. And so therefore, she believes that instead of taking immediate action to secure our border, she must first go and solve poverty and crime, not only in Central and South America, but in countries around the world.
Don't
because
forget climate
this is
change.
Who we have flooding across our border.
But don't forget climate change, Tulsi, because that's also another reason why she says people are coming here. So you got to solve climate change too. Just pointing that out to my friend Tulsi Gabbard.
There's now people from all over the world. Obviously, this is a very, very dangerous idea. And secondly, she has already shown in the Biden-Harris administration that she is not going to hesitate to weaponize the Department of Justice and law enforcement to go after her political opponents to get what she wants. And so what we've seen over the last 3.5 years has been so brazen in their abuse of power. It will be worse with Kamala Harris, who herself touts her record and what kind of president she will be as a prosecutor president, when we already know she will be a corrupt prosecutor president.
And she will use the power of the justice system to go after her enemies. But on the call, on the Karen call, Connie Britton, the actor, said, "I'm here tonight embracing myself in your incredible, profound white women midst, because we've got an effing job to do, y'all." She suggested that Kamala Harris will be a listener, because she's a woman. She will listen and lead with empathy, integrity, and the power of truth. That's what she said. She said it was seismic when Joe Biden stepped down, cosmic even. And since then, have you seen it? Have you seen Kamala glisten in the brilliance and shine of her true power and leadership? And what does that feel like? Feels like self-love. Women, when we are capable of opening up to our own voices and gifts, we can access a love self that is reflective and can shine outward to unknown depths. Which brings me back to us. Beautiful, beautiful white women. Here we are gathered together. And at least she joked, to her credit, that it's Karens for Kamala, which is true. White women, we have 100 days to save the world, white women. These people are amazing, aren't they? I mean, they really just Everything with them is about race and gender, except you're not allowed to be, if you're against Kamala Harris, it's because you're racist and sexist, but you have to be for her because she's a woman. I can't keep track at home. This is the singer Pink, which she would had a whine about.
When you speak poorly of women in power, those women will never hear you, but your daughters will.
Uh-huh.
Your sisters will, your mothers will, your grandmothers will, your cousins will, but also your sons will. And I watched a clip of Trump's speech tonight. I think it was tonight. Where he was saying,
Do you know what day it is?
I'm not going to be nice anymore. So is it okay with you all if I'm not nice anymore? And I thought, wait, were we nice before? Was he nice? And then everyone cheered. And I thought, oh my God, I have a 7-year-old boy and a 13-year-old girl. And I don't know what to tell them anymore.
How do you know they're boys and girls, Pink? Why are you choosing for them? How do you know? Sorry.
Who we're supposed to be. And if this is what we're trying, if this is what we're allowing, this base, horrific, horrible nature that is within all of us to be glorified and celebrated and elected, I don't know what to do anymore. I will lose. I'm not a person that loses hope, but I'm feeling like I'm losing.
You sound very chipper, Pink. You sound like you'd be fun at parties. I mean, you sound like a real hoot. What a depressing call. Could you imagine being on this call, how depressing this is? Like, I'm listening to a minute of this, and I want to take my own life. I do. I want to run in front of the nearest truck. I'm not going to play anymore for you. It's too depressing. I'm going to let you go and turn it over to the great one, Mark Levin. Have a great rest of your night tonight. Keep the conversation going on X at Rich Zeoli. Back tomorrow, of course, for a full show, 3 to 7 p.m. Pardon the sniffling and the congestion. We'll get through this together. Have a great night. Thanks.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.